Turn to Lamentations. That's where we'll be starting this morning. Lamentations. Lamentations is a book that was written by the prophet Jeremiah somewhere around 586 BC. It was written after the destruction of Jerusalem by the Babylonians when they came in, and once again the people of Israel had failed, and God said, well, I'm going to make you be captives. So the Babylonians came in, destroyed the city, destroyed the temple. Five chapters in this book, and each one is a poem that was written by the prophet Jeremiah about the grief that he had at the loss of this great city, and worse than that, the grief that he had at the hearts of those people who had caused this calamity to be brought about on the city and also on the entire nation. And when you look at the book of Lamentations, I think that in chapter 2 and verse 7, I'm not going to read all of it, by the way. Chapter 2, verse 7 is probably one of the most chilling verses in this entire book. The Lord has spurned his altar. He has abandoned his sanctuary. He has given up the walls of her palaces into the hand of the enemy. They have made a noise in the house of the Lord as on the day of a set feast. Back in 1 Kings chapter 8 and verses 10 and 11, Solomon was, well, in that particular passage, he was dedicating the temple after spending a number of years building that temple. And after the dedication of the temple, he gave praise to God. And after that occurred, the priests made some sacrifices. And as that was going on, a cloud settled into the temple. And it was so thick that they could not see to do what they wanted to do. They could not function. And so they left that Holy of Holies right then. And that was the presence of God that had settled in over the temple. That was the presence of God that was there for those people as they had that temple. But in Lamentations chapter 2 and verse 7, we see that the presence of God left the temple. The presence of God abandoned the altar, and the presence of God abandoned the city. When you look at this book, Lamentations, the first 2.5 chapters are a relentless retelling of the anger and the wrath that God had against the people of Israel, his children, those people who were supposed to love him but continue to abandon him. It's a terrible thing not to have the presence of the Lord any longer. You know, it's a horrible thing to be into the hands of the wrath of God, but I think it's a more terrible thing to not have the presence of God in your life. And in the third chapter, Jeremiah began to personalize this a little bit. You know, in the book of Nehemiah, when Nehemiah who is now 450 years past this point, when Nehemiah is talking about all of these things, he says, these are my sins. These are the things that I have done. He personalized it himself as well. And that's what Jeremiah does here. If you look in that third chapter, in the first verse, it says, I am the man who has seen affliction by the rod of his wrath. In verse 3, he says, surely he has turned his hand against me. And then when you drop down to verse 7, he has hedged me in so that I cannot get out. He has made my chain heavy. And then down in verse 10, he has been to me a bear lying in wait, like a lion in ambush. And you can imagine that. You know, you got a lion waiting in ambush. You got a bear that's lying in wait. You don't know that's going to happen, but there it is. And then in verse 13, he says, he has caused the arrows of his quiver to pierce my loins. Now, it's interesting when he uses that word loins there. That is, the word that is used there is also word used for the word kidneys. And back in those days, the kidneys were the site of the emotions. They believed that the emotions were in the kidneys. Today, of course, it's our heart. So basically, he's saying that he's struck by these arrows in his heart. And notice it's not just an arrow. Notice it's not two arrows. It's a full quiver full of arrows. And that's a lot of arrows there. This man is definitely in pain from what is going on. And when you look in verses 16 through 20, he says, he has also broken my teeth with gravel and covered me with ashes. You have moved my soul far from peace. I have forgotten prosperity. And I said, my strength and my hope have perished from the Lord. Remember my affliction in roaming, the wormwood and the gall. Painful thing for Jeremiah to have to go through, both physically, emotionally, or all physically, emotionally, and spiritually. It must have been draining for him to look at this destroyed city, to see the temple in ruins, to see the gates torn down, the walls torn down, all of these things going on, and the people in turmoil as they're taken away. But somehow, Jeremiah was able to see through the smoke and the ruins, and he could still see God's presence. If you look in verses 21 through 26, here's what Jeremiah says. This I recall into my mind, therefore I have hope. I'm sorry, let's go back to 20. My soul still remembers and sinks within me, and this I recall in my mind, therefore I have hope. Through the Lord's mercies we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul, therefore I hope in him. We sing that sometimes, don't we? The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul who seeks him. It is good that one should hope and wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. Jeremiah saw all of this was going on, and he knew that God had abandoned the temple. He knew that God had abandoned the altar. He knew that God had abandoned the city, but he had not abandoned his people. Now, he gave them up to be captive, but he had not abandoned his people. He had not given them up. He knew what Stephen stated many centuries later. However, the Most High does not dwell in temples made with hands. Paul later on reiterated this in 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 16. Do you not know that you are the temple of God and the Spirit of God dwells in you? Now, just a little side note here. I think it's rather interesting. When I was reading these, I thought to myself, well, that's kind of strange, because Stephen talks about all these things when he's making his argument, his case for the Lord before these Pharisees and the priests and all. And he finally says this to them, that the Most High does not dwell in temples made with hands. He said some other things. They got so mad at him that they stoned him. Well, who was holding the coats? That was Saul, wasn't it? Paul, who's who he became later on. Saul became Paul. And here was Paul, who was basically repeating what Stephen had said back at this point. This morning, I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about and concentrating on verses 22 and 23. And that's talking about God's mercies and their newness every day. It is an exciting and a comforting concept when you think about it and when you think about what it really means. So let's start by looking at the Lord's mercies. In this passage, it says that the mercies of God and his compassions are kind of together. They are paired together. And because of those mercies that he's given us, because of his compassion, we are not consumed. Now, mercy is something that we talk about a lot. Mercy is what? Getting what we are not getting, what we do not, or not getting what we deserve. The Israelites, if you look at it and you look at the past, the Israelites deserved to be wiped out. God had wiped out other civilizations for a lot less than this. And the Israelites really deserved to be wiped out. And as a matter of fact, at one time, God did want to wipe out the Israelites. You recall, he told Moses, I'm just going to wipe these people out. And Moses argued with him about this. You can't do that, Lord. People will talk about it. And so the Lord relented, and he allowed these people to continue. So this has occurred to God before. So, that's technically, they should have been wiped out for what they were doing. And we, because of our sinfulness, are just like the nation of Israel. We deserve death. We deserve spiritual death. We deserve physical death. The wages of sin is death. But God has mercy on us, doesn't he? He gives us ample time, and he gives us ample opportunity to turn our lives around every day that we live. We get that mercy because of, as Tom was talking about, we get that mercy because of his compassion, because of his love for us. Isaiah 30 and 18 says this, therefore the Lord will wait that he may be gracious to you, and therefore he will be exalted that he may have mercy on you. The word that is used there in Lamentations for mercy, it also means compassion. And it's used interchangeably as you go through the Old Testament. It's used many times. I thought it was rather interesting that one of the most striking and one of the most interesting points where it is used is in 1 Kings chapter 3. And if you recall in 1 Kings chapter 3, Solomon is going to have his first chance to prove his wisdom. Two ladies of the evening, two prostitutes, have each had children. And one of the children rolls over on the top of her baby during the night and kills the baby accidentally. She wakes up first thing in the morning and she finds out that that baby is dead. So she swaps babies with her friend. Now they've brought this live baby before Solomon and they say, you know, this is what happened. And the other says, no, this is what happened. She stole my baby. And so Solomon says, divide the child. And what is it that the woman says? The woman whose son was living spoke to the king, for she yearned with compassion for her son. That is the same word that's used for mercy and same one used for compassion later on in Lamentations. She said, oh, my Lord, give her the living child and by no means kill it. That is the type of compassion God has. This woman wanted mercy for her child. Don't kill my child. Even if this other woman has to have my child, don't kill my child. Have mercy. And that is the type of compassion he has for us, the type of mercy that he shows for us, as a parent would show for their child. We find this word also used in Nehemiah chapter 9. After the walls have been rebuilt and Nehemiah is recounting the faults of the Israelites versus the kindnesses and the goodness of God, and he looks at how the people of God have rebelled on a number of occasions and have been captured. In Nehemiah chapter 9 and 27, he says, when they cried out to you, you heard from heaven, and according to your abundant mercies, you gave them deliverers who saved them from the hands of their enemies. Time and again, he had looked down on this weak and sinful nation, and he had said, I heard a lady one time, we were talking about things, and she said, you know, I think sometimes God just looks down at us and goes, because that is pitiful when he hears these things. And he's looking down at this nation the same way. But even though they continued to fall, he always sent deliverers for them, somebody to rescue them from their own selves. And that was because of his abundant mercy. David also used this phrase in several of the Psalms to describe how God had reached down to him. In Psalm 40 and 11, it says, do not withhold your tender mercies from me, Lord. O Lord, let your loving kindnesses and your truth continually preserve me. Now it's a little bit deeper. It's not just compassion. It's not just mercy. It's not just abundant mercies. But now he's talking about tender mercies. And I've looked at that passage many times, and I've thought about this. And, you know, to me, tender mercies are more like those little gifts that God gives you every day that make life a little bit more bearable. God knows that Satan is trying to discourage you, and he is trying to discourage you at every turn. And he knows that. He wants to make you unhappy. He wants to make you ineffective in the Lord's work. So God gives you these little blessings in your lives. Years ago, I asked members of a class to write down what they thought were the tender mercies that God had given them, those little blessings that you got every day. And these are some of the things that they came up with. A beautiful spring day, walking on the beach holding hands, the light in a child's eyes when he sings about Jesus. That's great, isn't it? That just fills you with happiness when you see that. My personal favorite, cornbread and milk, not buttermilk. And no onions in it, please. Cornbread and milk. Swinging on a porch swing in the cool of the evening. A welcome hug. Someone putting on the Lord in baptism, and that was a wonderful thing. The smell of homemade bread. You know, we had this bread maker once. We had a timer on it, you know, and you'd put it in there at night, and you'd wake up, and it's homemade bread baking. That is so nice. I like this one. Indoor plumbing. You know, that's a tender mercy to me. The first whiff of a Christmas tree, laughter, tears. And those are all great examples, aren't they? And I'm sure you would have your own thoughts about what is a tender mercy. You see, in addition to the great mercies that God gives us, the mercies that he gives us in forgiveness and in salvation, there are 1,000 other tender mercies that the Lord gives us that we can take hold of and that we can enjoy that will keep us from being eaten up from the inside out. See, sometimes that's the hardest part. We get eaten up from the inside out. We're so filled with anxiety. We're so filled with all of these things going on that it just eats us up. But God gives us these little tender mercies to make life a little bit easier for us and help us understand that he is there. And those mercies are available for us every day. And in fact, they are made new every morning. That's what we're told here. New is another word that is overused and is misused today. New and improved detergent. Number one, it's not new. It's the same brand as has been before. Number two, it's probably not improved. They're just put a new package on it, a different package on it. You see, they put it, we've got a new movie coming out. No, it's not a new movie. You've just rehashed somebody else's plot. Or you're just remaking something else. You're rebooting it, is what they call nowadays. And a lot of times that's what it is. The word that's used here is used many times in the Old Testament as well. And one of the best examples that I came up with is when it was used in the course of Solomon's life. You remember Delilah was trying to trick him into the secret of your strength? And one of the things he said was, well, I tell you what, this is in Judges 16. I tell you what, if you will tie my hands together with fresh bowstrings, then I won't be able to get out of those. They have to be fresh bowstrings. Well, that word that's used there is the same word that's used here for new. These are new bowstrings. These are bowstrings that have never been tried before. And the connotation in that is new. God's mercies and God's compassions are new every morning. They're fresh every morning. You remember Anne just loved Krispy Kreme donuts. Can you imagine how excited she was when she saw that sign at Krispy Kreme that said, hot donuts. They're fresh. They're out of the oven. Aren't they great? Last week, I stopped by Krispy Kreme, and I got some donuts for the office. And the lady got two fresh ones coming out of the machine. Oh, man, I was so tempted to only bring 11 to the office, but I brought 12. Because you love fresh things, don't you? And each day is a fresh day for us. And each day, God gives us fresh blessings, fresh, tender mercies. We talk a lot about new days. If you've read Anne of Green Gables, Anne Shirley said this, isn't it nice to think that tomorrow is a new day with no mistakes in it? A gentleman named Douglas Pagel said this, each new day is a blank page in the diary of your life. The secret of success is in turning that diary into the best story you possibly can. And a singer named Nicole Scherzinger, whom I've never heard of, said this, you cry and you scream and you stomp your feet and you shout. You say, you know what, I'm giving up, I don't care. And then you go to bed and you wake up and it's a brand new day and you pick yourself back up again. Of course, Scarlett O'Hara said, tomorrow is another day after all. Those are wise words for all of us. But as we face each new day, we need to remember that it's a gift from God. It is a gift that He was given us. Every morning when we open our eyes, every morning when we draw in that breath, every morning, even though it takes us 5 minutes to actually get out of bed, I know it does me, even though it takes that long, we need to remember it is a gift from God. God gives us a clean slate to work with. He gives us a fresh set of blessings and mercies. He renews His promise that He will be with us. And He gives an opportunity for us to be His child in all that we say and in all that we do. Everything that comes our way during the day is a part of that gift. The question is, how do we view what we've been given? Last Tuesday, I was going to work, and traffic has been great the last month or so. I don't know what happened. But anyway, I paid for it last Tuesday. On the way to work, there were two or three accidents. I can't remember for sure, but they're off to the side of the road, fortunately. And I was delayed a little bit in getting to work, but not as much as I could have been. Coming home was a different story. There was an accident on 285, blocked three lanes, and I was backed up in that traffic. Beyond that, there was another traffic problem and is off to the side. And then on the way home, when I got on 78, there was some kind of police action going on at the Toyota dealership. There were five police cars sitting out there. I have no idea what was going on, but traffic was a mess there. And I was inconvenienced by all that. I was delayed by all that. But you know what? The blessing was I wasn't in those accidents. That was the blessing. When I am late getting started in the mornings and I pass by an accident, my first thought is, well, I pray that they're okay. But my second thought is, if I'd left 10 minutes earlier like I wanted to, that might have been me. So that's a blessing for me. I could have been in that. Other people have much worse days than I do. The person that was involved in those accidents had a much worse day than I did in those particular on that particular occasion. There were people who were in ambulances going to hospitals on the expressway that day past me. I know they were going to the hospitals. There's people that are having some problems. There were people later on that day that got a horrible diagnosis from the doctor. Those things do happen, and when they happen, it is difficult for us to see that those can be part of God's mercies. But they can be, given enough time and thought. There was a rainy Tuesday night back in 1976 on December 14th. That was the day my dad died. My dad was 51 years old, died of a heart attack. Now, I heard all these people talking about it, and I said, boy, he was so young, 51. And I remember thinking, because I was a young guy then, well, he wasn't that young. Now that I'm 67, he's pretty young, 51 years old. What kind of blessing came from my dad dying? What kind of possible blessing could there be from something like that? Well, I'll tell you something. There were a lot of... My dad was a great personal evangelist. My dad went out every week with the preacher and showed those Jewel Miller film strips. And there were an awful lot of people who became Christians because of Brother Mac and because of my dad. And after he died, there were some people who had been sitting on the fence who made that commitment, who decided they wanted to be a part of the Lord's body, and who made the confession and were baptized. Years later, because of my dad's influence, I was able to go to Haiti. And because I had that fire in me to do that mission work, my daughter ended up going to Scotland, and my son ended up going to Philippines. The blessing from his life was that he influenced people, and that is a blessing. It is a tender mercy that God gives us. There's a movie out there called Tender Mercies. Anybody ever seen the movie Tender Mercies? Robert Duvall. Great movie, isn't it? One person. You guys need to watch more movies. This is an excellent movie. I'm not going to tell you the whole story of the movie, but in it, I'm going to give away the ending, by the way, so if you think you might go see it, you might not want to listen. But anyway, in the course of the movie, he's a washed-up country singer. He ends up in Texas somewhere, and Robert Duvall, and he ends up at this motel, and his friend has left him. They've been drunk for 2 or 3 days, so he ends up having to work there, and he ends up working on, and then he ends up marrying this young widow who runs the hotel. He has been a big-time country singer. His wife back then was a big-time country singer. He was a mean drunk and all that. I won't go into everything, but he had a daughter by his first wife, and he was reconciled to her in the course of this movie, but toward the end of the movie, she's killed in a car wreck. And he's lost this daughter that he's trying to reconnect with. He goes up to Nashville for the funeral, and at his wife's house, his ex-wife is lying in bed. And as she's lying there, she looks at him and she says, why is God doing this to me? Why has God done this to me? Why would God want to hurt me like this? Now, you know, that is a selfish thing to say, isn't it? It's her daughter that's lying down in the casket downstairs, not her. God's not doing that to her personally. It's all focused on herself. And sometimes that's what happens with us. When bad things happen, you know, our first thought is, why are you doing this to me, God? We don't try to figure out what is going on. Later on, after the funeral, Mac is back home with his wife, and he's talking to her. And this is what he says to her. I was almost killed once in a car accident. I was drunk, and I ran off the side of the road and turned over 4 times. They took me out of that car for dead, but I lived. And I prayed last night to know why I lived, and she died, but I got no answer from my prayers. I still don't know why she died and lived. I don't know the answer to nothing, not a blessed thing. I don't know why I wandered into this part of Texas, and you took me in and pitied me and helped me to straighten out and married me. Why? Why did this happen? Is there a reason that happened? And Sonny's daddy killed in a war? And my daughter killed in an automobile accident? Why? You see, I don't trust happiness. Bad attitude at that point. But it's interesting because the next scene, her son comes home and she says, well, Mac bought you something. And he bought him a football. So he goes out and he goes across the street to his stepfather and they start tossing that football around. And suddenly, he's enjoying this tender mercy that God has given him of this son that he can develop that relationship with. It's a wonderful thing to think about. And he had moved on to enjoy those particular blessings. The movie, by the way, starts out with this song. It's called It's Hard to Face Reality by Lefty Frizzell. But it ends up with this. You are what love means to me. And he's made quite a journey in this movie to see the tender mercies of God. And interestingly enough, I saw a little interview with Horton Foote, who's the guy who wrote that. He's a Broadway writer and all, and TV writer. But this was the first movie he had ever written directly for the screen. And after he had come up with the idea, they pitched it to some people at Fox movie or screen studios, whatever, in New York. And those two guys said, well, tell your agent to come out to Hollywood and we'll do a deal and we'll get this movie made. So about a week later, his agent went out to Hollywood. She got off the plane. She went through the airport, picked up a copy of a trade paper. And in the trade paper, those two guys had been fired from Fox. So there was no deal. And this is what Horton Foote said. He said, I thought maybe the Lord's trying to tell me something, and I'll just go ahead and write it. And it's an interesting story about how it finally got made. But it got made, I believe, through God's providence and through God's blessings. God works in ways we cannot fathom. And that's why he's God and we're not God. You know, you can look at this book of Lamentations and see the children of Israel being led into captivity and marching past these ruins and smelling all the smoke of fire and asking themselves, why is God doing this to us? Though they knew exactly why God was doing it. But then there was Jeremiah, and we can look at it from his vantage point, seeing the same scene and saying, God's mercies, God's compassions, God's blessings, God's hope are new every morning. They are fresh every morning, and we can make a new start every day that we live. That's mentioned another time in the New Testament, by the way, Ezekiel 36, 26, I will give you a new heart. And I will put a new spirit in you. I will take out your stony, stubborn heart and give you a tender, responsive heart. Again, the same thing that Paul said in 2 Corinthians. This means that anyone who belongs to Christ has become a new person. The old life is gone. A new life has begun. God longs for us to become those new people. Not just at baptism. Not just right after that, but every day. You know, I mentioned this a long time ago, but I remember the day after I was baptized, coming home from school and bragging about being baptized to my friends. But as time went on, I didn't do that as much as I did before. But that's what God wants us to do. Remember that wonderful feeling when we come up out of the water. I came up out of that water 52 years ago, and I still try to think about it during my life. I still try to remember what that was like. And worse than that, what it was like before that happened, what it felt like to be lost. God longs for us to remember that we are new people and to grab those fresh mercies that he gives us every day, to trust him, to trust in his promises, and as Zechariah said, to judge fairly and to show that mercy and kindness to one another. Not just us, but everybody with whom we come in contact, to let them know that Jesus can make them new. That he will make them new if they will just grab a hold of his tender mercies. This morning, if you've got a reason to answer an invitation, we're going to offer that to you right now while we stand and sing.